offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Those of you who are regular followers of our series will know that we go through the 1991 summer course series as part of this edition of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. We've completed four discourses in the series thus far, and last week I had Brother Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, who is still with me here. And we're going to continue what we started last week. That is, we thought of doing a summary of the first four discourses before we move ahead with in the series. We were very ambitious in thinking that we could do all the four discourses last week, but we scrapped through and covered only two discourses. So we're going to continue with the third and fourth discourse in that series. So on behalf of all of you, a warm welcome to Hari Shankar again. What's wrong with me today?
Right. I need to change my name, I guess.
Right. What's in a name after all? It just reminds me of, you know, how many times Swami would have his own numerology for students. And, and I mean, I don't know whether it's the most appropriate way to start the discussion. I remember Swami would sometimes come out and give a very, very sketchy description of a student and say that I'm looking for this boy. I remember one of my classmates, Swami, came out and said, "Where is that boy, northeast boy?" And Swami, how does he look? I mean, who is he? Swami said, "No, he'll always keep smiling." And I don't know, how do you find a boy who does not smile in Swami's presence?
I don't know. I recall my very first interaction with Bhagwan as a student. He kept calling me Shiv Shankar.
Okay, so I'm not very far from that then.
Yeah, so I was very new. So at some point of time, I had a desire that I should hear my name from Swami's lips. So I thought I should correct him. So Swami, he excuses those who are completely new. So I told him, "Swami, my name is Hari Shankar." He said, "Yeah, Hari Shankar, Shiv Shankar, the same." And so I was obviously excited, Swami has spoken and all that. So I called my mother and I told her, "See, this Swami spoke to me today." Oh, she was very happy. "So what did Swami say?" So I told her, the beginning, very funny, but Swami kept calling me Shiv Shankar, Shiv Shankar. And she went totally still. She was very quiet.
Okay.
And I kept saying, "Amma, Amma, what? Say something." And she says, no, I was just remembering when you were born. We had actually first named you Shiv Shankar."
Oh my God.
And then it seems Swami came in the dream of my aunt and said, "No, he should be named Hari Shankar." So that's how the name got changed. But the Swami kept calling Shiv Shankar, Shiv Shankar, and not without reason.
God, not without reason. Yeah. I remember even Sai Prakash would say that. Yeah. Almost all through his schooling, Swami would call him Prakash. Yeah. Swami would never call him Sai Prakash. Mm. Apparently, when he was born, his parents had asked Swami for a name. Oh. And Swami had said Prakash. Uh-huh. So they requested, "Swami, can we make it Sai Prakash? We would like to add Swami's name in it." And Swami said, "Na Petkondi." So till the end, for me, he's only Prakash. Right, okay. That much with the name, I think we'll continue with the discourse. As we said, two discourses last time, and we're in the third discourse. The third discourse was very profound one, where Swami spoke about this Mahavakya Tattvamasi. And the entire discourse was on that, and how in many ways Swami said how this belief of Tattvamasi is so ingrained in the approach to life itself.
Right.
And that's what Swami started off with in that discourse, right?
And the interesting thing is, actually when I saw this Mahavakya, I was actually trying to go back and see, like, where does this Mahavakya come,
from. Right.
And the very first time it appears is in the Chandogya Upanishad. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading the whole Upanishad, just to get the summary of what it was all about. And to my astonishment, the entire discourse is, completely based on that. Like, wow. There are sections of that, of the discourse and the Upanishad, which are almost going parallel.
Oh.
That is the interesting thing. So the Tattvamasi is obviously one of the main, it comes in one of the stories in that Upanishad. But almost the entire discourse, it follows, what is said in the Chandogya.
Probably could share with us that story.
It was the context. Yeah, I think we had discussed this the last time around. This was the story of Shwetaketu and Uddala Karuni.
Right, right.
So as we if you remember, what had happened was that the father Uddalaka, he sends Shwetaketu saying that there's no one in our family who's had like a formal education.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you go and get a formal education? He does that, comes back and starts sharing with his father. And so, you know, that during the course of that conversation, he discovers like one by one, this is not who I am, this is not who I am. And at some point of time, the father starts saying that who you are is this, you know, tattvamasi, mm-hmm. tattvamasi. So okay. that's how that word, that, I mean, the phrase originates.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the beautiful thing in that conversation is he kind of incites the curiosity in the student by asking him a very beautiful question.
Mm.
He says, you've learned so much. Yeah. Have you learned that by learning which you know everything?
Everything. And yeah, like if you remember, we said that, you know, most of our conversations with Bhagwan were like this. He would start with something very mundane, you know, maybe what was it that you had for breakfast today, you know, something like that. Or like I was talking to you last time, Swami would ask like, what is technology? And beginning from something very mundane, the conversation would, you know, meander towards something very profound.
Right.
At the end of it, you're left with, oh, this is a this is an insight.
Okay? Like, I'm reminded, I think we've mentioned this many times on radio before, 99 Kodai trip. You know, Swami was there and Swami picked up Brother Prushti, not our Bishop Prushti, his elder brother. Right? Rameshwar Prushti works in the Central Trust. He happened to be the shortest in the group, right? And Swami called him up, and Swami stood shoulder to shoulder to him, and Swami looked at the boys and said, who's taller? Okay? And that's a tricky question, because you don't know whether Swami wants to be told that he's taller, or he wants to be told that, you know, he's shorter. I mean, because I remember there's a photograph of Professor Kasturi and Swami standing shoulder to shoulder in one of the books which Professor Kasturi had penned. In that, you can see that Swami is actually standing on the step on the portico.
Right.
And Professor Kasturi is standing on the lower portico. And Swami has covered his robe in such a way that it flows through his feet, and Swami is looking to a little bit taller than Professor Kasturi. So, you know, you never know when Swami asks a question like that. So, you know, people started saying that, Swami, you're taller. Swami, with your hair, you're taller than him, and that sort of a thing. Okay, and so most of the answers were like, Swami, you're definitely taller than him. Swami said, wrong answer. Swami said, I'm shorter than him. Okay, and everybody is wondering why Swami is saying that. And in a very soft voice, Swami said, Anoraniyam Mahator Mahiyam. I'm shorter than the shortest.
Yeah.
I'm larger than the largest. Largest. You know, what a, as you said, starts off like a small prank.
Yeah.
But always that really powerful message coming through.
Right.
And, coming to this discourse, I think one thing which Swami was beautifully saying is, how this concept can be visualized in our day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Of course, Swami goes to the other examples, but this one part of the discourse where clearly is the crux of the entire discourse. Probably we'll play out that part where Swami speaks about Tattvamasi, and we'll discuss about that.
అనేక ఉపనిషత్తులందున్నటువంటి యొక్క భావములను క్రోడీకరించుకొని వీటిని త్రికోణము అనేటువంటి స్వరూపంగా ధరింపజేసి జగత్తునకు చాటుతూ వచ్చారు.
They started propagating this doctrine of Atma, taking from Upanishads and explained in a triangular fashion.
ఒకటి శరీరం.
One is the body.
రెండవది మనస్సు.
The second is mind.
మూడవది ఆత్మ.
The third is Atma.
శరీరము స్థూలము.
The body is grass.
Atma sutram.
The mind is subtle.
Ee stulamu sutramu ainatunte shariramunaku atmaku samanvayamunu kavinchi rendittini koorchi cherchi aanandimpa chesinatundi manasu.
The gross body and the subtle atma have been united and jointed and coordinated by the mind that stands in between.
Ee moodinti yokka samanvayam yokka pratipadane tattvamu.
The integration and the coordination of the three is nature or tattva.
ఈ తత్వము అనేటువంటి ఒక సత్యాన్ని మానవుడు సరిగా అర్థం చేసుకోవటం లేదు.
Man is not understanding properly the meaning of tattva or the nature.
తత్ త్వం. తత్ అనగా అది.
Tat means that.
Tvam anaga idi.
Tvam meant this.
Adi anaga manam gurtinchavalsindi emiti.
That means what? What is it to be real?
Manaku duramuga unnatvanti danini that antam.
That which is away from you is called that.
Daggaraga undinatvanti danini this antam.
That which is quite near to you is called this.
Deniki duramuga unnadi, deniki daggaraga unnadi.
To what is it is distant, to what it is nearby.
Mana indriyamulaku duramuga unnatvanti danini that annadu.
That which is far off from senses is that.
మన ఇంద్రియములకు సమీపంగా ఉన్నటువంటి దానిని దిస్ అన్నారు.
దాట్ విచ్ ఇస్ క్లోజ్ టు సెన్సెస్ ఇస్ దిస్.
కనుక ఇంద్రియములకు సమీపంగా ఉన్నటువంటిది జీవితము అనగా దేహమే.
ద బాడీ ఇస్ క్వైట్ క్లోజ్ టు ద సెన్సెస్, దాట్ ఈస్ దేహ ఆర్ ద బాడీ.
మన ఇంద్రియములకు దూరముగా ఉన్నటువంటి ఒక తత్ అనేటువంటిది ఆత్మ.
దాట్ విచ్ ఇస్ ఫార్ అవే ఫ్రమ్ ద బాడీ ఆర్ సెన్సెస్ ఇస్
దూరముగా ఉన్నటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మను.
దట్ ఆత్మ విచ్ ఇస్ ఫార్ ఆఫ్
దగ్గరగా ఉన్నటువంటి దేహముతో.
అండ్ ద బాడీ విచ్ ఇస్ క్వైట్ క్లోజ్.
ఆ సీ కలపటమే మనసు యొక్క స్వభావము.
మిక్సింగ్ బోత్ ఇస్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్.
దీనినే తత్వం అసి అని పిలుస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దిస్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ దట్ ద ఆర్ట్ తత్వం అసి.
కనుక మానవత్వములో ఈ శరీరము మనసు ఆత్మల యొక్క మూడింటి యొక్క సమ్మిళిత స్వరూపాన్ని మనము గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
Therefore, in man, we should make an attempt to understand the very form and the nature of body.
Tattvamasi anaga pratyekamainatvanti yokka artham emi ledu.
Tattvamasi has no separate meaning.
Adi idi cherinatvantide tattvamasi.
Tattvamasi is a mixture of that and this.
Anaga atitamainatvanti yokka aatmato.
That atma which is transcendent.
Anubhava roopamainatvanti dehamuto.
The body that experiences
ఏకత్వాన్ని అనుభవించి
experiencing unity
దివ్యత్వాన్ని పొందటమే.
One should attain divinity.
తదుపరి జీవుడు దేవుడు ప్రకృతి ఇది మూడు కూడాను మరొక కోణంగా నిర్మించుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
From the other point of view, there are these three things: the individual, God, and Prakriti, the world.
ఈ మూడింటి యొక్క సారాంశమును రక్తి భుక్తి ముక్తి అని కూడా ఏర్పరచుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
ది ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ త్రీ థింగ్స్ కెన్ బి సెడ్ ఎస్ రక్తి భుక్తి అండ్ ముక్తి.
రక్తి ఏమిటది?
వాట్ ఈస్ మెన్ బై రక్తి?
ఈ జగత్తే మనకు రక్తి.
దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ రక్తి.
భుక్తి ఈ దేహములకు భుక్తి అత్యవసరము.
భుక్తి ఫుడ్ ఈజ్ నెసెసరీ ఫర్ ద బాడీ.
ముక్తి స్వరూపమే ఆత్మ.
ద లిబరేటెడ్ వన్ ముక్తి.
కనుక ప్రతి మానవునికి కూడాను రక్తి భుక్తి ముక్తి అత్యవసరమని కూడాను ఈ తత్వం అసి బోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
తత్వమసి టీచర్స్ దట్ ఎవ్రీ మ్యాన్ నీడ్స్ రక్తి భుక్తి అండ్ ముక్తి.
స్థూలము సూక్ష్మము కారణము.
ద గ్రాస్ ద సటిల్ అండ్ ద కాజల్.
So that is the clip which we thought is very, very important in that discourse, because Swami speaks about that triangular aspect, and you know, he says that how that thou art, that each one of it forms one part, one vertex of the triangle, and then he says it's similar to the body, mind and the atma. It's similar to the creator, nature and the individual.
Right. Yeah, and right at the beginning of, you know, this clip, there was something that Swami was speaking about. So he was saying that there is the gross body and the atma, the which is very subtle, and you got the mind, and Swami says that this is the mind that connects the atma and the body. Mm-hmm. So now the picture that I usually have is that, you know, maybe the atma gives rise to the mind, and then the mind gives rise to the body.
Right.
Or there is a body and the atma enters that. So, you know, this is something I've been puzzling over. Like, what did Swami have, you know, what was he hinting at? Like, is there some...
No, I once was talking to a youngster. He was telling about an interview they had with Swami, and in that they had asked this question. He said, Swami, seva is very easy to do. You know, we go out and do... Bhajans you ask us to do, it's easy. But you say that you believe, you have to believe that you're God. You know? get to that state where you know that you're God. Mm. Now that's like really difficult, Swami. It's very difficult to obey you. And you know, almost in a sense of guilt that, Swami, we are not able to follow this aspect of your message.
Mm.
And Swami said, it's very simple. What do I do?
Mm.
Swami said, don't I keep telling you that I am God?
Mm.
See, unless I tell you that I am divine, you will never know it. Mm. I have to declare. Swami said, I keep telling. Swami said, you also do the same. He said, keep telling in your mind that you are divine, you are divine. You may believe it, you may not believe it, but at least keep telling it in your mind. I think that's precisely what Swami is telling in this context, where, you know, there is the grossest part of you, which is the body, which is very easy to associate with because it's so visible and, you know, easy to cognize.
Right.
And then you have the subtlest part, which you have no idea of.
Mm.
Even the mind can be understood, but, you know, the existence of the Atma is so contested in rational terms.
Yeah.
So Swami is saying that this mind is right in between. Probably Swami is hinting that you can either associate it with the body or you can associate it with the Atma. I think it's not possible to overnight dissociate it with the body.
Right.
But with the slow process that, you know, you kind of hold on to both ways and slowly let go of the body.
I remember how Swami would illustrate this one. Mm-hmm. He discourses, Swami would say, you know, like he would pick up his kerchief and say, this is my handkerchief. Mm-hmm. And you say, my body, you know, my mind. Then, and that means that all the time, even in your language, it comes out that you are distinct from any of these that you're speaking about.
Even as you say that, I just remembered, I think, 99, when I joined Swami's college, during the Guru Purnima or Dashara, that was the first time I heard Swami giving this example. And I was almost slapping my forehead, and how did this not occur to us? You know, it's so simple that Swami is saying, this is my body, this is my handkerchief, I'm separate from the handkerchief.
Yeah.
And when you say my body, how are you not able to realize that you're separate from the body?
And incidentally, the handkerchief served multiple purposes.
Right.
Because the moment Swami would next go on to the mind, he would say, see, what this handkerchief is what? It is composed of all these
threads
which are together. And then Swami would bring out. So just like that, your mind is just an intertwined bundle of thoughts, right? And in fact, like, you know, I was reading a few days back, like Swami would give this example, no, of like he would question us, he would confront us with, you know, that why we are so comfortable in the idea that we are this body.
Mm.
And he would say, like, are you inhabiting the same body as you did when you say you were, like, say, 20 years ago, 10 years ago? It's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And even like physically, it's so very true, right?
Mm.
Like the cells in our body, they keep regenerating themselves. They get replaced.
I think there's a fact in so many years, I think, you know, 4 years or some number is that.
Practically, like the
your new body altogether.
Yes, absolutely. And so there's a philosophical question which I think the Greeks had asked, right? So it's called the Ship of Theseus. So this is a ship, and the question is this, it's a thought experiment.
Okay.
And so the ship at that time used to be built of these wooden planks and fastened together, etc. So the question was, over years, if you start replacing it plank by plank, and there comes a point of time where none of the original wood is still there in the ship.
Okay.
And would you still call it the ship of Theseus? Right? So the same way, like when the body is altered so completely, like how do you still say that, I mean, what makes it still the same Prem or still the same Hari? So that was the question.
Right. I remember one of the speakers who had come to Parthi, he was giving this example, you know. A Swamiji, a young girl comes to him, and this girl had some fancy nail polish, you know. He had long nails and very, very beautifully manicured, you know, nails. So that caught his attention. He said, hey, you have very beautiful nails. You know, you've maintained them very well. So apparently this girl was embarrassed because, you know, this is a spiritual discourse she has come to attend.
Right.
And probably she's overdressed and, you know, over-groomed for that. So apparently the next day she's cut her nails and come. Okay. And he says, hey, what have you done? You know, you've cut your nails away. So then he says, will you give me those nails? What you've cut away? And, you know, there was a sense of disgust in her. You know, what do you do with nails that I've cut off from my finger? And he said, see, till yesterday it was so beautiful because it was associated with you.
Yeah.
The moment you cut it away, it becomes garbage. So he said, same thing with the body.
Yeah.
The body is beautiful and the body is given value because it is associated with the real you.
Yes.
And, you know, the more you live your life dissociated with that real view, actually the body is useless.
Right.
It's a beautiful message.
even the mind, you know, it's astonishing to think about like how we are so complacent, right? Mm-hmm. Like in our daily experience, we almost take it for granted that, you know, it takes somebody like a divine master, a divine personality, or like Swami himself to come and question us, you know, like why do you think you are your mind? Mm-hmm. You know, for what, like what makes you think you are that? And if you really pay attention to it, Prem, like it's, if we were the mind, right, if, for example, the thoughts that you and I have, right, is there any way that we can stop it? If the thoughts are us, let's stop the thoughts. And you begin to realize that all those thoughts, they are going automatically. Mm. I mean, there's literally nothing we have to do with that, most of our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it goes on like that. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. So are you having thoughts, or the question can be reversed in asking, are the thoughts having you?
Yeah, you know, someone was talking about a message forward which they, you know, received today.
Mm.
Apparently there's this scene of a man, you know, walking around with his cow tied to a rope.
Right.
Basically, he's the master of that cow is going around. So, there is this spiritual master who is walking along with his disciples. And he sees the scene and he asks his disciples, you know, who is the master and who is the owned?
Hmm.
Right? So he looks at him and says, yeah, the cow is being owned by this man. So, he's the master.
Right.
So, this spiritual master says, are you sure? So he said, yes, master. I mean, he's the one who probably must be feeding it and taking care of it. So even as they are talking, he lets go of that rope, or rather the animal, you know, pulls away from him. And the next scene is the animal is running and this man is running after
him. Yeah.
So he said, see, that animal almost never needed the man. The man needed the animal, and so he was only the, you know, he was not the master, the animal was the master.
Animal. Okay.
So it's almost like that, you know, though we say that these are my thoughts, I mean, as you're saying, it's so much we are under the control of our thoughts. It's the thoughts are saying he's my man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so this actually the that part is like something very useful if you keep contemplating on that. Most of the time, the way we think of ourselves, you know, the moment you start identifying with your body and your mind, you almost develop a model of the world, and that defines completely the way you interact, right? So you begin to consider yourself as an object in a world full of objects. And then, you know, all our lives are defined by that. We try to grab what we can from the world, right? And you can see the kind of mess it has led us all into. Like this, the what they call as the mentality of scarcity. You know, that there's not enough. There's never enough of anything. And we keep striving and striving and striving, and it's never happy with that. So the real basis of that is like we depend on these thoughts, we depend on this body, completely identify with that. So it takes like somebody to come and, you know, have a snap out of that way of thinking.
A very simple thing I was thinking, you know, I mean, the same thing, because the mind is so much fashioned by what is given to you as an idea of how you live your life, and, you know, what is supposed to make you happy, what is supposed to make your life fulfilling.
Yeah.
We don't stop and think that, do we really need that?
Correct.
I was just thinking the other day, you know, you go out for a walk in the morning or go out for a jog, and I used to play music, you know, wear earphones and play. And I realized that sometimes it was really giving me a headache, right? And then after a while, I just unplugged and I was walking. It was so pleasant. So it just struck me. So we are so, you know, drawn to the idea that here you are going out for a jog, you know, sports shoes and track pant and t-shirt and all that. You're supposed to listen to music, you know, that's what,
that's
the cool image, right? Then I said, I mean, I don't enjoy it, you know, it's not everybody needs to enjoy that, you know. Sometimes you just enjoy being in the nature and listening to the sounds of the birds. But so much it's built in our head that this is how experience of jogging is supposed to be.
Mm.
I think that's what it is, you know, all through our life. It takes a lifetime to break all of this one by one and, you know.
Yeah, because that. The world sort of, or the society itself feeds aspirations to us.
Right.
And yeah, so like for example, a car, right? So most of us have that at some point of time we desire to own a car, you know, to that the complete trappings of success. We want to exhibit it to the world itself, or we want to experience joy for ourselves. But there's a, you know, a very, it's a common phenomenon, happens almost inevitably, that the car that you have in mind, you're waiting with so much anticipation, and the mind conjures up all kinds of images. You buy the car, and within, you know, very short time, you have something called the buyer's remorse. You know, instantly, that was that satisfaction which you thought would happen. It doesn't happen, and you're already comparing it to all the cars, yeah, you know, next year.
I think that's a very important thing. When that urge is there, probably you can't stop yourself sometimes. You
know? Yeah.
When that urge to buy something or possess something is there. And I think what we can do is be a conscious witness to what happens to this mind. You know, when you buy something, and as you said that there is that, you know, buyer's remorse or something, be conscious to that. You know, let that become a part of your experience.
Yes.
And say that, okay, I've had this experience, you know, let it become a part of the...
Yeah. And I think that is the balancing act of the universe.
Right, right.
And I think it is innate, it is there.
I think what we do is, balances. Probably this is not the car. Let's go for the next one. You know,
the satisfaction. It's a constant race that we run. But, you know, like, so you really need to question at that point of time, like, who needed the car? You know, what was it that needed the car? Was it the body or was it the mind? And you begin to realize that, you know, something else is going on. You know, you're not that, there's some game or there's some farce that is going on out here. Otherwise, like, if it was everything that it was meant to be, you would have that feeling of complete satisfaction. But you begin to realize that maybe you are at the service of something else, right? As you said,
right.
Who is the master and who is the, you know, owned?
Right. I think in the current time when it's, you're constantly told what is supposed to complete your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it means, see, even in the 90s or 80s when we were growing up, your desires were built on what is in your country's market, you know, Indian market.
Correct.
Now it's like it's a world market. You know, what gives happiness to an Australian is supposed to give happiness to me.
Correct.
What gives happiness to somebody in one of this you know, European countries? I measure my life based on that. You know, do I have a life? I think that's really, Swami would often say that, you know, especially when he's speaking to the MBA students. You would say that when you're looking at a business model, when you're looking at going and doing something, it's very important to see which society you're doing it for.
Yes.
And, you know, customize adapted it to that, adapt it to that. And, of course, and coming back to this, Tattvamasi, the interesting thing, whenever I read this Mahavakya, you know, as we were discussing, it comes from the Samaveda.
Yeah.
Like we have each of these Vedas, main Vedas, finally funneling down to this one Mahavakya.
Hmm.
Like, I think Rig Veda is... I think Rig Veda is Aham Brahmasmi. Aham Brahmasmi is, I think, Atharva Veda.
Mm-hmm.
And Tattvamasi is
the,
right. Prajnanam Brahma is from the Rig Veda.
Right.
And from the Yajur Veda, it is, I think, Ayam Atma Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of this thing is, each one, if you see, if you talk of Rig Veda and Samaveda, it's supposed to be propitiating a deity which can confer happiness on you.
Right.
Right. And, you know, you, all the time, it is not asking. Asking comes only in the Yajur Veda.
Mm.
In the Rig Veda, it's all about praising.
Right.
You know, oh, you're great. Oh, you're this, you're that. You know. And Rig Veda, I think a lot of places it comes that knowing you itself is so, you know, special for me.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That sort of a thing. You know, so much of glorification of this one entity,
right,
which you believe as God or, you know, Purusha, whatever name you give.
Mm.
Then when it comes filtered to this Mahavakya, it's almost like you wake up and says, oh, I am after all that.
Yes.
Tattvamasi, you know, I'm that.
Yeah.
Or Prajnanam Brahma is just knowing you is the same state as being with you, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, we used to chant this Devi Suktam. Starts with like Aham Rudre Bhirvaso Bhischaram Yaha Ditte Ruta Vishwade Vaihi. And there are two ways of reading it. And at one point of time, you realize that if you start putting yourself in, and it's a actually a hymn of exaltation.
Okay.
When you begin to realize that all those gods whom you are worshipping, right, I am that.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a very powerful way of actually chanting that mantra. We used to chant it in Mandir, and I used to wonder, like, who is this Aham Rudrebir? Who is saying it? Is it the Devi who is saying that I am all that? And then it, you know, a powerful way of saying it is standing in that I am that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you chant that I am this, I am the Rudra, I am the Deva. And, you know, sometimes people also present a picture that the Vedas, they had this like an evolution. Right?
Okay.
So the Rig Veda, you start, as you said, no, with the propitiation of gods, and then the Yajur Veda is a little more mature and so on. But if you see, like, one of the earliest suktams and mantras in Rig Veda are typically suktams, they're hymns, right? Right? Yeah. So the Nasadiya Suktam,
right.
Right, one of the most profound and one of the earliest suktams, and there you, at the very end of the suktam has a twist, you know.
Okay.
So you're talking about, and it says that there is a God above who is looking down at all this creation, knows all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the final twist is, does even He know?
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
So the like I used to draw a parallel between, you know, a conversation that Raman Maharishi actually had with a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
He is speaking about Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about all the miracles, you know, that happen around a saint. And they were describing, you know, when Christ did this, Christ did that, and the miracles that would happen. At some point of time, Raman Maharishi asked him to inquire, like, did Christ know about these miracles? Like,
oh.
Did He know that these were happening?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and that sets off, you know, like, at what mental state the sages are, that they don't really identify themselves even with that body-mind complex.
It's almost like, now
this.
You are creating an image of God.
Yeah.
And, you know, from God's point of view, from Swami's point of view, would say that you are as divine as I am.
Yeah.
So it's like, in the state of perfection, you will see God as perfection. In
yeah.
your state of imperfection, I think you will also see God as, you know, a sort of imperfection.
Yes, desiring this.
Reminds me of what Professor Nanjunde would always say, that, you know, he had once seen a scene during Darshan. Swami would go walk along gracefully, and sometimes, you know, there would be somebody holding out a letter. Swami would ignore him and walk ahead, four people or something. He will stop, come back, and take the letter and give him Vibhuti. Okay?
Oh,
so he had seen the scene a couple of times.
Hmm.
So he asked Swami, he said, you know, in the initial years he was very innocent, and he would ask whatever comes to his mind to Swami, and Swami was very patiently, you know, allowing him to grow in his own pace. So he asked Swami, when you look at a person, do you always know everything about him, or do you recall what you need to know about him? Okay. And Swami asked, why are you asking that? And then he said, Swami, I've seen you doing this. No, is it that you walk ahead and then by then you get the information that no, he deserves the grace, or, you know, he needs to be responded to, and you come back.
Yeah.
Then Swami told, you fool, it's not like that. Because Swami didn't say fool, I'm sorry. Swami said, it's not like that. Swami knows everything all the time, always. He says, but I keep playing games like this. So you just look at the games, but keep remembering that Swami knows everything all the time, always. You know, and that's the, I mean, it's typically how, I mean, we all used to do that. You know, I need to tell Swami.
Yeah.
Probably Swami does not know how serious the situation is. So it's almost like, I mean, as you're saying, we create an image of God, and we kind of, at some point, say that, is He as perfect or as imperfect as I am?
Yeah, and that's why that I really love the twist it gives at the end.
Right.
Like, that, you know, He knows all creation, and in the end, does He know? And it's not as if questioning God, but questioning our notions of God.
Right, right.
Like what we think. You know, the entire Rig Veda is, we think, you know, completely based on creating gods and then propitiating them. But there was a lot of wisdom, you know, that is underlying all this. Yeah.
And coming to the end of this discourse before we move to the next one. As expected, towards the end, Swami speaks about human values. You know, here is this entire discourse where Swami is saying that, you know, Tattvamasi is the concept of that discourse. Swami says how, Swami gives various examples, beautiful ones, about the seed and the tree. And Swami is saying how that is Tattvamasi. And then Swami gives that very nice example of when you add sugar to water.
Yeah.
Swami says that sweetness. So it is like, you know, the sugar saying that sweetness is mine. That sort of a thing. Then Swami speaks about the river and the ocean. So the idea entirely is, you are under an illusion that you are something else, but you are not that, you are the ultimate.
Yeah.
But then the idea of human values comes in. Whenever I see this, you know, why Swami speaks so much, this analogy always comes to mind. You know, one of our brothers who worked in the defense forces, he shared this idea with us. You know, he said, in the army, you train one of the soldiers, he goes through at least 3 months of training before he is given a weapon in his hand. Okay. The same thing if you go to the militant organizations, yes. You know, extremists. They take a teenager, train him for 3 days, on the fourth day he's given a weapon. He said, you know, what's the difference? In the army, you're taught how not to use your weapon.
Yes.
There you're taught how to use your weapon.
Yeah.
So it's like when you have to tell a person to use his, you know, whatever power is in his abilities with responsibility, it takes much, much more time.
Hmm.
Indiscriminate use of power, you don't need training for that. You know, it's almost like that, you know, it's very easy for us to get up and say that, oh, I'm God and I'm divine.
Yeah.
But the responsibility which goes for that comes through this, you know, what Swami would say, sanskara or culture. And Swami speaks at length about Indian culture and, you know, importance of culture in life.
Yeah, it's beautifully strung together, actually.
Right, you know, Swami would never talk about the Advaitic philosophy without talking about the idea of doing good, satkarma.
Yeah, it never, you know, abstract, dissociated concept.
Right.
But something that was, I think, wedded to the everyday life.
Right.
And so if, you know, if you are identified yourself with that divinity, it must show up in your everyday behavior.
And I think that's the beauty, you know, whenever Swami would come and say, I am God, you're as much divine as I am, probably the first thing in our mind is, can I wave my hand and materialize objects? Can I read people's mind?
Yeah.
But if you look at Swami's life, you know, there are so many things which Swami would say that these are the divine qualities.
Mm.
The idea of endless patience.
Yeah.
The idea of complete dissociation from that body.
Mm.
I mean, these are the divine qualities. We never think of these as qualities probably which I should...
Yeah,
you know, I
remember this spiritual teacher Alan Watts. You know, once he was speaking about meditation.
Okay.
And he said, all of us indulge in meditation, and what do? Like, we sit in that particular pose, we close our eyes, and then we, you know, begin to meditate in whatever way we are guided. But he said, have we ever thought, like, how did this practice of meditation begin? And he said, like, for a saint or a sage who's already established in that divinity, meditation is like a very natural thing for him or her to do. And then we as ordinary mortals, we watch that. And we somehow begin to think that if we practice meditation, we will get into that stage. And that is totally reversing the role. He said that when you are in that stage, state, meditation is an automatic, you know, manifestation of that. So, likewise, it is with values. So, the both have to, you know, one is the thought that you are God, and another is the check.
Right.
Like, does it flow automatically?
Very, very true. You know, whenever you look at the lives of some of these saints, you know, in discussions earlier also, this would come up. Somebody like Ramana Maharshi, you know, he suffered with a lesion which became a cancer later, I think.
Yeah.
And then you have the story of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, who had throat cancer. You know, it's almost like it had to be in the script.
Right.
Because here was this phenomenal personality which has been telling, you know, loudly that you're not the body. You're misassociating yourself with the body. It was almost like it had to happen because that's how the message goes out loud and clear.
Right.
You know, when that happened to him, the equipoise with which these saints, you know, maintained themselves, it was almost like a stamp on the message that they give. And even with, you know, with Swami, we would often say this, the way Swami lived his life, from childhood to the later years, when we spoke to one Mr. Nagaraj, who came to Swami in the 40s, out of the blue, we just asked him, so what's the one standout thing about Swami? So he said, I first saw Swami in the 50s, my family saw Swami in the 40s, when Swami would wear shirt and, you know, dhoti. From that time, and now I see Swami in the 2000s. I come here and see Swami. Swami has not changed. He says, people around Swami have changed. The place around Swami has changed. But Swami has not changed. He said, I really feel it. When I go and speak to Swami now, that's the thing which really hits me. He says, Swami has not changed. He's just the same. So, you know, that is really the message of divinity. Because Swami showed, when you have nothing, how do you live with dignity? When you have everything, how do you lead your life not being touched by any of those things?
Right.
Now, these are, when you observe Swami, you see that these are the divine qualities, you know.
Yeah.
The idea of mind reading or materializations or all of those other things are really nice, but as Swami would say, that these are things which can be acquired.
Yeah.
But
Siddhis
and all of that. Right. Sorry, the fourth discourse, the Ishavasya Upanishad.
Right.
And very interestingly titled, Ishavasya Upanishad, Renunciation and Pleasure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the title of the discourse. Probably again we'll play out one clip from this discourse.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Where Swami speaks of that central theme of this discourse, where it is a synthesis of renunciation and pleasure, or bhoga and tyaga. Mm-hmm. How you can have both at the same time and have the cake and eat it too, in that sense.
ఉపనిషత్తునందు మానవుడు ఏ భోగమును అనుభవించినట్టు అనుభవించవలసి వచ్చినను త్యాగం చేత భోగమును అనుభవించమని ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
ఈశావాస్యోపనిషత్తు డిక్లేర్డ్ మ్యాన్ మే ఎంజాయ్ ఆల్ ద ప్లెజర్స్ అండ్ అఫ్లూయన్స్ బట్ యూ షుడ్ ఎంజాయ్ దెమ్ విత్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్.
కేవలము నిత్య జీవితంలో మానవునకు భోగమునకును త్యాగమునకును పొత్తు కుదరదు.
ఇన్ డైలీ లైఫ్ దేర్ ఇస్ నో రిలేషన్షిప్ యాక్చువల్లీ స్పీకింగ్ బిట్వీన్ అఫ్లూయన్స్ అండ్ సాక్రిఫైస్.
త్యాగి కేవలం భోగము జోలికి పోడు.
ద మ్యాన్ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్ విల్ నెవర్ బి ఆఫ్టర్ ప్రాపర్టీ.
భోగి త్యాగమును చింతించడు.
ద మ్యాన్ ఆఫ్ అఫ్లూయన్స్ విల్ నెవర్ థింక్ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్.
ఇలాంటి పరిస్థితిని ఎందు త్యాగముతో కూడినటువంటి భోగమును అనుభవించటము ఇది ఏ విధంగా సాధ్యమవుతుంది?
Under these circumstances, how is it possible to enjoy all the property with this principle of sacrifice?
దీనిని ఈశావాసికోపనిషత్తు ఆచరణలోని అహంకారమును అనుభూతిలోని ఆసక్తిని రెండూ విసర్జించినప్పుడు త్యాగమునకు భోగమునకు ఎట్టి భేదము ఉండదు.
ఈశావాసికోపనిషత్తు డిక్లేర్డ్ when you do not have any kind of this ego, or when you don't have any kind of desire, there will be no difference between this pleasure and sacrifice.
Kanuka ahankara aasaktulato kudinatvanti okka karmalu emi chesinappatikini ivi bhogamuto kudina tyagamule tyagamuto kudina bhogamule.
So long we undertake actions coupled with this ego and the desire, it amounts to sacrifice coupled with affluence.
Ee ahankara abhimanamulu yendu swarthamu swaprayojanamu shunyam.
In these things, this attachment and also self-interest are totally missing.
Swartha saprayojanamu lenatvanti sarva karmalu kudanu tyagamuto kudinatvanti bhogamule.
Actually speaking, the selfishness and self-interest are contained in the affluence coupled with sacrifice.
Kanuka prati manavudu kudanu vidhiga karmalu acharinchi
every man should undertake action.
ఇది నా ఆచరణ యొక్క ఫలితము అనేటువంటి అహంకారములకు అవకాశం ఇవ్వకూడదు.
He should never give scope to the understanding that is the result of the fruits of his action.
నేను చేసిన కర్మల యొక్క ఫలితము కనుక అని దీనిని తానే అనుభవించాలనే అభిమానము కూడాను అవకాశం అందించరాదు.
He should not give a scope to the feeling that I alone should enjoy the fruits of these actions, being the doer myself.
ఇది ఏ ఆత్మతత్వమును ప్రబోధించినటువంటి ఈశావాస్యం.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్డ్ ఇన్ ఈశావాస్య ఉపనిషత్ దట్ రివీల్స్ ఆత్మిక్ నేచర్.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి అహంకారమునకు అభిమానమునకు త్యాగము గావించి అనుభవించినటువంటి భోగమే నిజమైన యోగమని కూడాను నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
ద రియల్ యోగా కంప్రైజెస్ ఇన్ సాక్రిఫైసింగ్ దిస్ ఈగో అండ్ అటాచ్మెంట్.
That was that central theme of this entire discourse.
Yeah.
And it's almost like just what we want to know, right? How can I enjoy life and still be spiritual, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's
the
question.
Stay in the world and yet remain.
Right? Stay in the world and yet be on track to go beyond.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
That's most of us, sadly, or even otherwise, you know, this is what we do, you know, when we come to Swami. Either we want a simpler way of spirituality or we want a spiritual validation for whatever we are already doing.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's something which Swami always breaks.
Yeah.
You know, at least after an initial warm-up session, it's like it attacks right there. You know, whatever you've been thinking is spirituality.
And it is a central question because one thing even the Gita and all the Upanishads, they recognize that this world is the field of action. Right.
Right.
The
right.
Karma Kshetra, as you'd speak, you know, they have to.
You have to.
And yeah, so while you are acting, and we need that guidance that says, like, you know, like, what is the method such that we escape the, you know, consequences, not escape, but in the sense that either the merits or the, you know, bad karma that accumulates out of our actions, like, and this seems like a vicious cycle.
Right.
Is there any way out of that? Right. And I think Swami is here giving the prescription for literally experiencing that, like, while you are still in the world.
Right.
And as I was reading this, I was recalling one, you know, passage.
Mm-hmm.
I had read in a book very long time, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Right.
It's a...
I remember struggling to go through that.
Yeah, it was like
a real tough book
dense,
to read, right.
Dense with a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. But this is one very, you know, easy to follow passage. I recall the author is talking about mountain climbing that he and his son, you know, they wanted to experience some quality time together. So the son suggested, like, why don't we climb this mountain?
Mm-hmm.
And the son had actually, he was maybe 8 or 9 years old. And the author says that he had gone to the YMCA for training.
Mm-hmm.
And they had taught him a little bit of mountain climbing and those skills and that. And he's at that age where he's breaking out of his childhood and wants to show himself as a man. He's still a kid, but then he wants to assert that he's a man. And he says that that dictated his mountain climbing.
Mm.
So as he was trying to climb the mountain, so the father, he's, you know, walking at his own pace, right? Not trying to prove anything. And he's enjoying the scenery, the nature. Whereas his son, at all points of time, he wants to prove that he's better than his father.
Mm-hmm.
He has learned some skills. He's not an amateur. Right? And so he keeps trying to always be, say, 10 meters ahead of the father. And at the end of it, like when they reach the mountain, he compares their experiences. And he says that, you know, I could see he's completely weary, exhausted. And he's just sitting there panting. And just not able to look at the beautiful scenery that is now spread out under him.
Right.
And he has no sense of fulfillment.
Mm.
Whereas he looks at himself, he says that when I got there, I had enjoyed my ride I could appreciate the smiles, the smells of the pines, everything along the way. And when I got there, the beautiful scenery, right, I could see all of it. And
very beautiful, mind.
Yeah, because
really gives a lot of food for thought in that.
Absolutely.
You know, how many times we go through life and have a goal post for us, and we say that I want to show the whole world who I am.
Yeah.
You know, the world doesn't care. You know, at the end of it, the child didn't realize that his father doesn't care. You know.
Yeah.
Whatever you are, you're loved for that, and you know, there is nothing to be proven. And the world doesn't have time to stop and say that thus proved, you know.
Yeah. And
I mean, how much of our life is wasted in that idea? And as you're saying,
exactly,
you miss the beauty of the
trek. And we are doing that all the time. See, most of our actions are actually dictated by that. We want to prove to either our parents or to somebody who's hurt us, or even to ourselves,
even to ourselves,
that we are the most intelligent, or we can earn money, you know, or that we are incomplete, that people don't respect us enough, or they don't admire us enough, and we are in a constantly striving to do that. And so, you know, the world mind is always operating from the viewpoint of insufficiency, and that's the game, right? It keeps saying like, so it's never enough. And people wonder, I've been working this hard, I've earned so much, I've got this fame, and yet, why do I feel unfulfilled?
And the idea grows in our head.
Yeah.
Probably somebody must have hurt us and spoken slightingly about us.
Yeah.
That person has moved on, but this idea has been growing in our head.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, when you've achieved it, I mean, it's a big achievement for you. The other person probably has, you know, forgotten it.
He has no appreciation for that.
Appreciation for it. And, you know, when... It's really a mirror shown at our face.
Exactly.
In that sense. And, I mean, as easily as Swami is saying it, I think it's so difficult, right? I mean, I'll have to admit that. Because I would always think of it this way. And this used to come to my mind, you know, after Swami's darshan, you come out and you have these thousands of pairs of slippers and you have to find your slipper from that heap. I would say, you know, what Gita says is like this, try your heart out and search for what you're looking for, but don't bother if you find it or not. And I used to think, you know, how do I find my slipper with an attitude like that, you know? You put your entire energy behind it, but you don't want to find it.
Yeah.
You know, you have no desire to find it. And it's almost like that, you know, life is Swami saying that, you know, put all your enthusiasm and, you know, Swami would say that, utsaham, sahasam, all of those qualities, you put all of that and do your action, but the next moment you just let go.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you can enjoy it completely.
Which is why, you know, when you see Swami, if you actually look at his schedule, right, how many years, maybe for decades and decades and decades, practically the same thing, every single day. Right, you come out for darshan, call people for interview, then call the officials of the ashram, your the various works that are going on, and like so, and all this, like Swami would be like as fresh as a rose, have time. One very vivid memory I have, and this was like the president of the nation, and he is coming for darshan of Bhagwan. Right, and I remember like Swami is just standing out there. He's with the primary school children, and I can see the president is very surreal scene. You know, the president is walking up the, you know, the Rama gate,
right,
that ramp. He's walking towards Bhagwan or his seat near the interview room, and Swami is just looking at that so unconcerned. And speaking to the primary school children, asking like, what did they have for breakfast? You know, how are their studies? You know, there's none of that, you know, that tension you would normally associate with such an event. Completely relaxed, almost detached from what is going on, and very focused on what is immediately in front of him. You know, that the child is there, children of his school, and he's inquiring after their welfare.
I think that freshness, you know, that freshness of leading every moment.
Yes.
I remember one interaction with somebody had with Swami. Swami would come for these sports meet practices. And his favorite part used to be the march past. You know? He'd always come and sit there, and he wanted to see the march past.
Yeah.
5 year students, you know, the fourth year, fifth year, you start getting that march past fatigue. You know, it's the same routine. It doesn't change. It's the same thing of these squads after squads coming in. Swami would come, sometimes sit through two practices of that. And apparently somebody asked Swami, how are you doing this every year? And, you know, year after year coming for the, I mean, at least items, even items get a little stale after
repetitive.
A while, you know, repetitive and all of that. This march past is really, I mean, there's no change. It's just the same. You know, how is it, Swami, you don't get bored of it? And Swami's answer was so simple and, you know, really so beautiful. Swami said, but the children are different. You know, the children are different. See, what a profound statement it is. Swami's all the while sitting there. For him, it's not the march past.
Correct.
For him, it's not that routine which is happening in front of him. For him, it's an individual trying to offer something to me, and I'm responding to that.
Yes.
You know? And it's all. And Swami said, it's a different individual. Even if it's the same boy, he's different from what he was last year. You know, it's almost like that. In mind, you've grown. In thoughts, you've grown.
Yeah.
And Swami's saying, it's fresh for me.
Yeah.
You know, how do you lead that? I think if we have that kind of an attitude, this enthusiasm in action, which Swami says in one part of the discourse, Swami says, inaction is evil.
Yeah.
So you have to perform action.
Okay.
But action is mundane. You have to perform, you know, a detached action.
Correct. You know, but, and to think of it, Prem, it is only a being like that that can state authoritatively that life is a game played. You know, it's not like life is a workshop, go and sweat it out. It's none of that, you know. Yeah. So
you have a semester, you have to learn, you know, all of this during, between your birth and death. Nothing like that, you know.
None
you just
of that, yeah.
Go there and pure, just be there. Just
yeah,
be there.
Pure self-expression, you
right,
know. He's,
right.
And you can see that. He's never caught up in, like, I got to prove something to somebody. Like how Lord Krishna, when he says, I really don't have anything to do in these 3 worlds, and yet I act.
Yeah.
There's something, you know, but we feel, no, we have to act because... And there's always, you know, in order to, right?
Right.
There's a reason that we keep ascribing. It's a disease that we've got. And we keep, you know, in order to prove to somebody or I got to earn money or something.
Right.
Never pause to reconsider, you know.
You'll see this anecdote from Albert Einstein's life, right? There's a neighbor who brings his young daughter and tells him that she doesn't know maths. He sits and teaches her maths. I mean, it's really like that, you know, when you're a genius and your field of work is so large.
Correct.
I mean, you would just do it for the joy of it.
Joy of it, exactly.
You know, he has so nothing complete, to gain, he has nothing to give. It's just for the joy of probably the love for the subject, and, you know, correct. The love and of expression of.
Because that is the statement of the Ishavasi Upanishad, that Purnamadah Purnamidam. Right, you're already complete, you're already whole.
Right.
And here you are like a fool trying to complete yourself.
Talking about that Purnamada Purnamidam, this morning we were talking about Archanam in the other discussion.
Yes.
And we brought up this topic about the Antony is violent, you know, Swami would often say that. He says he does it as an offering to God and so he wants it to be perfect. So I was trying to look for discourse clips where Swami is speaking about Antony and his violin. And interestingly, three or four places where Swami spoke about him, the concept which Swami was talking about in that section of the discourse was Purnamada Purnamidam. He's saying that he saw God as completeness. So what I offered to him must be complete.
Yes.
And I was really taken aback by that, because Swami is speaking about devotion as, you know, as a state of completeness.
Right.
You know, you're looking at God who's this complete being, and all that I do to him must be complete.
Right.
It has to have all my being, you know, represented in that act that I'm offering to him. It's so very beautiful. I mean, I'm really surprised that you said that, you know, Purnamada Purnamidam actually comes from Ishavasya Upanishad. And in fact, the later part of the discourse, Swami speaks about that idea of Tyagena Ekeya Mritattva Manashi. You know, a very interesting interpretation Swami gives to that. He says, how does it start? Nakarmana
Natrajaya.
So Swami says, people think Dhanena, it is not through wealth, but it is to sacrifice. Swami says it's not like that. Swami says, is this Dhanena Tyaga? Right? It is sacrifice of your wealth. And what is the wealth? Your knowledge is wealth. Your health is wealth. Your time is wealth.
Right.
You know, your prosperity is wealth. You use all of this to express your Tyaga. And that is what will lead you to immortality. No, very beautiful way of Swami saying that don't think that you don't need all of these wealth. All of these wealth are important, but use this wealth for the benefit of the world.
That's right.
And he says that is the whole idea of the Chandogya Upanishad. I'm sorry, Ishavasya Upanishad.
And in fact, like as we were saying last time, the entire Ishavasya Upanishad, it explores the theme of balance. Right? Like, so as you were saying, and checks and balances are inherent in the universe. Inescapable. I just sometimes wonder at the whole scheme of what the universe is, but I would challenge anybody, if there's any desire that you have, just try and, you know, prolong it as much as you can. Let's say, like, I remember when I was very young, I used to be fascinated by this cool drink called Gold Spot. It doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And I used to love it so much, you know, while others like thumbs up and all, I used to love Gold Spot. And when I was young, my idea was that, you know, if I can grow up and I can work in a gold plant, Gold Spot factory, where they actually, I used to imagine that I'm here and I can drink like as many liters of it as I want. And now when I look back, it's you know, so sounds silly, so right, foolish, right. But that's precisely how, you know, each one of us, we live.
I mean, right? I think coming back to that, I think, if not anything, just being observant of our own growth, you know, that will give us so much of perspective of life. Because as you were speaking about Gold Spot, there are so many things about my childhood, you know, so much worry and so much sleep was lost over it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't grow tall, you know. You know, that's a thing which is very common, I think, in our youngsters.
Yes.
You feel you're not growing tall. Now when you look back, the 3 inches, 4 inches makes no difference to your life. I mean, you feel that it's absolutely nothing that it's going to change your life.
Correct.
How many of our desires are like that? How many of our cravings are like that?
And to whom do they belong?
Right.
That's a very important question.
Right. I mean, it's not lost in value to anybody else. It's lost in value to your own self.
Yeah.
The idea that you're not what you were yesterday.
Yeah. And this is very beautiful statement that I don't recall to whom it is attributed, but it is said, you know, that being is lost in becoming.
Becoming, right.
And all the time, that chasing of some imaginary, you know, fantasy that we have. And then all the time we're losing ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's what immediately sprung to mind when you said.
Right.
We go on diminishing ourselves, so we don't recognize our own value.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, just as the previous discourse we said, Swami spoke about Tattvamasi and then brought it to human values, virtues. In this discourse, again, Swami speaks about action. Swami speaks about how you're performing action and how perfection in action.
Yeah.
But Swami concludes the discourse with devotion. And, you know, the beautiful way Swami synthesizes these two concepts and, you know, brings them together. He says the best way to do action without a desire is you do it as an offering to God.
Yes.
That's the simplest way. You know, you offer it to God and you say that I did it for you. If you give me something, it becomes your prasadam. I have nothing. It's got nothing to do with what I've done. You know, it's almost like you bring God in between the action and the results. The easiest way to dissociate the two.
Yeah.
And we've seen it in, you know, in the smallest of ways, we've experimented it, you know, sports meet. I remember so many times you would endlessly do something which would never see the light of the day. But you have no worry about it because you enjoyed the process. And you enjoyed whatever came after it also. I remember when we were, after our studies, we were planning for a music program. And I think we practiced for months for that music program. Every night after dinner, we would sit and practice. That program never was put in front of Swami, but, you know, we all remember that practice session so fondly.
Yes.
Because, you know, it was done for, you know, we're doing it for Swami. Swami doesn't want it, fine. You know, that's any way he chooses to accept it. Right. You know, I think that is what happens when you bring God in between. Probably we'll end with that clip.
Right.
Where Swami speaks about, you know, how you do it, everything, do all of this with a prayer that's, God, I'm offering this to you. In return, you give love for me,
right,
love for you in my heart. You know, yeah. Very beautifully, Swami concludes.
Yekkada suchina undinappatikini, kantiki kanipinchadu, chetiki chikkadu.
Though the divinity is present all over, you cannot see with the physical eye, you can hold it apart.
Anubhuti.
It's only can visualize out of experience.
Pratyaksha pramanam anukuntunnaru murkhulu. Idi pratyaksha pramanamuku ematram kodanu chikkadu. Anduvalane aprameya annaru bhagavantuni.
You cannot have it for your physical experience, therefore it is said aprameya, beyond measure.
Ee tumbler lopara neeru undi.
Here is water in the tumbler.
Inno chakkara vesamu.
Here you mix sugar.
5 nimishallo karigipoyindi.
It got dissolved.
Aa chakkara ekkada untundadi?
Where is the sugar?
Neetlo sarvatra untundadi.
It spread all over the water.
Aduguna undi, paina undi, chuttu undi.
It is at the bottom and above and all around.
Kaani kantiki kanipinchadu, chetiki chikkadu.
You don't see the eye and can hold the palm.
Okka chukka naaluku paina vesukunte appudu unnadi ani satyam gurtistundi.
But when you keep a drop on the tongue, you can experience the taste of it.
Anaga anubhutike idi unnadi anetuvanti artham telustundi kaani ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రమాణములకు ఏమాత్రమో ఇది తెలియదు.
యూ కెన్ ఓన్లీ ప్రూవ్ ఇట్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్, నాట్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ఫిజికల్ అపియరెన్స్.
కనుక నీవు సాధన చేత ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవించినప్పుడు ఇది ప్రత్యక్షానుభూతి.
సో అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ ఇఫ్ యూ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఇట్, దాట్ ఈస్ ద రియల్ ప్రూఫ్.
కనుక ఆత్మాన్వేషణ సలుపుతూ,
ఎంక్వైర్ ఆత్మ,
ఆనందాన్ని ఆశిస్తూ,
ఎక్స్పెక్టింగ్ బ్లెస్,
సాయుధ్య సామీప్యమునకు సరియైనటువంటి సాధనలు సలుపుతూ,
వీ షుడ్ హ్యావ్ ఆల్ ప్రాక్టీసెస్ టువర్డ్స్ ద ప్రాక్సిమిటీ.
ఈ ప్రేమతత్వాన్ని పెంచుకున్నప్పుడే,
వెన్ వీ డెవలప్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ లవ్,
అప్పుడే మనలో ఆ యొక్క ప్రేమ స్వరూపము సాక్షాత్కరిస్తుంది.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ యూ కెన్ హ్యావ్ ద ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
ప్రేమ లేని హృదయము లోపల,
ద హార్ట్ వితౌట్ లవ్,
ప్రేమ పంట పండదు.
యూ కెన్ నెవర్
ప్రేమ పంట లేనప్పుడు,
when there is no harvest of
prema phalamu manaku kanipinchadu,
you cannot have the fruit of love.
Prema rahita marubhumulalo premaankuramulu pemponda premaveshamuto prema sudha varshamu varshimpaga premanatullu pravahimpaga murali ganamu seyagade krishna ganamu seyagade. గోపికలు కోరారు, ప్రేమరహిత మరుభూములలో మా హృదయాలు ప్రేమరహితమైనటువంటి భూములుగా ఉంటున్నాయి.
గోపికాస్ ప్రేడ్ దాస్, అవర్ హార్ట్స్ ఆర్ బ్యారన్ వితౌట్ లవ్.
ప్రేమాంకురములు పెంపొంద, ఆ ప్రేమాంకురములు పెంపు చేయాలని మా యొక్క అభిలాష.
అవర్ డిజైర్ ఇస్ టు సీ ది సీడ్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ టు జర్మినేట్.
కానీ అది నీరు కోరుతుంటుంది.
బట్ ఇట్ డిజైర్స్ వాటర్.
ప్రేమ సుధా వర్షము వర్షింపగ ప్రేమ నదులు ప్రవహింపగ మురళి గానము సేయగది.
ఫర్ ద రెయిన్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ టు షవర్ అండ్ ద రివర్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ టు ఫ్లో, కృష్ణా సింగ్.
కనుక మన ప్రేమ సుధావర్షం అనగా ఏమిటి? ఆ ప్రేమ పలుకులే సుధావర్షం.
వాట్ ఈస్ ద రెయిన్ ఆఫ్ లవ్?
the words of love amounts to the
prema hrudayame mane marubhumudu.
The heart of love is marubhumi.
Prema yokka pracharame mane yokka jalamu.
The propagation of love is the water.
Prema yokka phalame mane yokka aanandamu.
The fruit of love is bliss.
Ee aanandam anetundi prabahame prema samudramu.
The flow of love is ocean.
కనుక ఈ అనుగ్రహ సముద్రం లోపల ఈ అల్పమైనటువంటి జీవి అంకితం కావాలనుకున్నప్పుడు ప్రేమ తత్వాన్ని మనం పొందాలి.
ఫర్ ది ఇండివిజువల్ టు డెడికేట్ వన్ షుడ్ హ్యావ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
దీనిని త్యాగంతో కూడినటువంటి భోగము అన్నారు.
దిస్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ ద భోగ కపుల్డ్ విత్ త్యాగ.
దేహ సంబంధమైన భోగం కాదు.
It is not related to the physical body.
Mano sambandhamaina bhogamu kaadu.
It is not the one of mind.
Atma sambandhamaina bhogamu. Idi sahaja siddhamainatundi.
It is atmic and a natural one.
Idi kalpitamu kaadu.
It is not artificial.
Idi kritimamu kaadu.
It is not artificial.
Kevalamu idi atmanantamuto koodinatundi.
It is one full of atmic bliss.
Kanaka vidyarthulara prema chetane prapanchanni dedipyamananga veliginchandi.
So students, illumine the whole world.
ఈనాడు ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది శూన్యమైపోయినది.
Today there is no love.
మనిషికి మధ్య పచ్చి గడ్డి వేసిన బగ్గును మండిపోతుండాలి.
Between man to man there is hatred.
కనుక మనం ప్రేమను పెంచుకోవాలి.
Therefore we should develop love.
So that dear listeners, with the clip which we wanted to play, and Swami concluded the discourse with that clip. I think there's nothing more to add to that. That beautiful song which Swami sang, which was the prayer of the Gopikas.
Right, yeah.
And that's the best way to enjoy life.
Yes.
Do whatever you do, do it for God. The very idea that you're doing it for God will bring perfection in the action.
Yeah.
And the fulfillment and the joy which we are all after will be got in the act of doing itself. You know, you don't have to wait till the results come, you know, in that sense. So Hari Shankar, I've got your name right. Thank you for joining me, and of course you're going to be part of this program henceforth. So next week, dear listeners, we'll begin the fifth discourse in this series. Thank you all for being with us. We offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. Do join us next week too. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.